Hello. I'm back since probably 4 or 5 years. Thank you, Spotify and Anchor, for holding this space for my podcast, Life is a Hat Party. This podcast was dedicated to my mother, who I was the guardian for in the years of her dementia, and shared some challenging experiences of the daily life of being a care for a very previously independent woman. The reason for today's podcast is that I have come full circle. And saying that, meaning that my mother passed in 2018, I returned back to London, got caught up in the COVID restrictions, and when I returned back to Egypt in 2022, I returned with the plan of traveling to places that I wasn't able to travel when I was full care of my mother. These faraway places are not very often visited, but I was called by the pictures of water. One of the first pictures I saw was salt water where people float, and I didn't know where that was. I just knew, wow, I didn't know that's in Africa and in Egypt. So I discovered that actually these waters were well known and curated by an associate friend of mine here where I live that I've known for a long time. So I called upon them to put together an itinerary for myself, and three other women joined me. And by being led by the waters of this part of Africa, I would later discover after the tour that this was a divine, what we call lineage calling. The date of the beginning of the tour was October 17th. That was more or less dictated by the tour guide. This date later would remind me of the repetition that I've had to this October 17th date. But more importantly, and for the purpose of now, it is the date where a poet, one of the first African-American poets, Jupiter Hamon, was born October 17th in the 1700s. At the time, in October 2022, I did not know about the man known as Jupiter Hamon. I would later find that out. And why I would find that out is because of the events that transpired during the tour. And one of the main events was that one of our guests, who is of Irish descendants, was feeling most of the time very unsafe, to the point of anxious anxiety. Anxiety, that's a good word, because it was so intense. That's a nice way to make it so clear how intense it was. And at first I took this as a assault due to the fact it was my first tour, and no, it did not run as smoothly as I imagined. But because her reaction was so extreme. I felt called to look further and dig deeper. I don't know what moment, what aha moment came that I found the connection. There were so many, and that's why I need to unpack this very slowly and give a foundation by sharing the history of Africa and slavery that is not very often shared in the mainstream or taught in the schools in America where I'm from. So I hope I've tied up all the tangents there. To make it easier, we'll start with a reading from the museum. It's called the abhmuseum.org, their website, where I'll put a link to this. It's the America's Black Holocaust Museum. And here we're going to talk about slavery in Africa before the Europeans, because mostly you know about the African-American slave trade, the transatlantic slave trade. But did you know that people with limited freedoms, which is another way of slavery, were found throughout African societies for thousands of years prior to the transatlantic slave trade? An example being the working peoples of Egypt and Nubia, referred to as slaves. Scholars consider the people who built the Great Pyramids of Giza similar to indentured servants or serfs. This means these enslaved individuals were most likely compensated for their work. This would have also given them social mobility that allowed for slave people in Africa to eventually find a place among the society they serve. People could escape the bonds of slavery to become equals within the general population. We have slave trade also amongst the societies that not only were based on the fact that slave, a lot of times indentureds or servitude came through war. And if a country, tribe lost the battle, the war, the soldiers would become the slaves of the winner. And this was a normal practice. But what we have is also, there were other several practices in place. The spread of Islam across northern Africa reinforced the institution of slavery, while at the same time restricting those who were defined as slaves, meaning free Muslims, regardless of race, could not be enslaved. However, a slave conversion to Islam did not guarantee freedom, although, listen to this, it lasted over 13 centuries. This is way before the African Atlantic slave trade. The trans-Saharan slave trade, organized by various Arab nations, remains understudied by historians even until today. Quote from Gazkunzu in 2018, the Arab slave trade has affected more than 17 million people in the Saharan region alone. More than 9 million African captives were deported and 2 million died on the roads. This is from the book, The African Muslim Slave Trade, Lifting the Taboo. More currently, some African countries have begun to examine their roles within the Arab slave trade. Which country is Tanzania? They have a monument referring to that. We have also interesting information, and I showed her picture in a post. I'm doing this a little bit in connection with in my AKA Claudia Instagram account, where I speak show pictures of women who were part of the slave trade in one way or another. Okay, slavers came from Europe with the promise of foreign goods in exchange for people. Okay, at first, several African empires, kingdoms, and nations helped the European traders. They traded away captured enemies for, like I just talked about in the war, exchange for servitude. Captured enemies for European and Asian supplies. However, as the Europeans' demand grew in number, African leaders began to refuse sending away their people. European traders bullied the local people into helping them maintain the slave trade by threat of violence. One warrior, Master Jacqueline, Nicole would like this, would not be intimidated, was Queen Anna Nzinga, born in 1583 and died in 1663, of Ndongo Mataba, modern-day Angola. Her forefathers worked to appease the Portuguese invaders who requested humans for trade. As a princess, Nzinga served as a diplomat to Portugal. She was able to establish a peace treaty with the Europeans, limiting the number of required people to be traded for slavery. Once becoming queen, she rejected the Portuguese demands. Queen Ninja spent 40 years fighting for the security of her people against the Portuguese. She was remembered as an inspiring military leader. Living into her 80s, Queen Nzinga never surrendered her power. She is one example of an African leader who resisted the roots of colonialism. Sorry, I lost my place. She's one example of the African leader who resisted the roots of colonialism and slavery. Now, as you see, that there is not just the African American transatlantic slave story, which I want to mention because when I was doing the research, and we just put in slave, I would always come up with results that were about the African-American slave trade. I had to dig deep, very deep, to find the information that I did about the stories of slavery and those who used slavery in so many different ways, and it connected me also back to the servitude that many women and children were victims of, really, that was also seemed to be quite normal from the Chinese ancient rulership and the use of concubines to the Ottoman sultans keeping of harems and the barbary piracy that would supply these harems by traveling by boat on the Mediterranean and then on the Atlantic as far up as Iceland and Norway to bring these women back to Turkey, which is now modern day Turkey. This is important because the waters around Egypt and Africa are the connecting pathways for this slave migration. The entry from the West into the Mediterranean from the Atlantic Ocean made it possible for this to take place, for pirates to take people from the coast, snatching them literally, and taking them upon on a ship on the waters and moving them into unknown lands. And the waters of Africa from Lake Victoria and the highlands of Ethiopia actually fill into the Mediterranean because of the altitude of the waters that come from Lake Victoria. And that is why Cairo in the northern part of Egypt is called Lower Egypt. Just the labeling of the country is based on the flow of the waters. The waters flow down southward to the lower parts of the coast in Egypt, and especially here in a palm shape, very plentiful routes and deltas into the Mediterranean Sea. Because water holds memory, myself as one who drinks structured water and has had this experience with the core understanding of the ability for water to hold memory, the teachings of Emoto, the Japanese scientist who froze snowflakes. My epiphany came when I thought about for the first time, because I wasn't taught in school that people were snatched from the coast in Ireland as well, that perhaps this had a connection to the anxiety of one of my guests on the tour. And as I educated myself and read articles, but also was assisted by someone here in Egypt of this country about the history of child slavery and the harem usage, or just the use of women as slaves to produce hairs. And of course I know this as African American that was also very much in use in America, that women were used to produce more slaves. And this has gone on not first for African Americans. This is a practice that has gone on for thousands of years and has left not one country or culture free of such practices. It's 18 minutes. I feel that this is all I'm going to say for today. I have some links that will support this information. And feel free to subscribe if you are curious about the rest of this story, which leads to the waters of Egypt and the healing powers that could actually bring us full circle to understand why we are here now in the quest to protect our children.